The Homance Chronicles.
The female equivalent of a bromance.
So many poor choices.
But so many good types.
But so many poor choices. This is The Homance Chronicles, and I'm Sarah.
And I'm Nicole.
Every day is a new cadence. I don't know what to do with myself.
I feel like I'm coming down from a mild panic attack. So
yeah, just a full day of tense. Yep. You're going to sleep like a champ tonight.
So hopefully, yeah, I would say so. Hopefully, I will be able to get with it. Participate in this story.
Oh, it's actually, I think you will be able to, because it's actually a pretty good one. Well, maybe.
It's a good distraction to shift my mind off of feeling like I was going to be stuck without a car for weeks.
And okay, so just to clarify, they're doing road work at the end of her road, and her animal brain was panicking the whole day because nobody really fully transparently communicated what was happening, and the end of her driveway was all tore up and she wouldn't be able to get out. So she went down a couple different paths. Panicking was one. Second was figuring out if maybe she could just, you know, because she's got a Jeep, maybe she could Jeep over it. No. Third, she was going to drive through her neighbor's yard and do it under the cover of night, you know, because you can't let anybody see you doing shit like that.
Yeah. We went from panicking to problem solving, back to panicking.
All for everything to be resolved as of 10, 15 minutes ago.
Truly.
With still no actual communication from any source. So here you are.
No. The system of warning me that my driveway would not be accessible for weeks, 2 to 3 weeks, was a door hanger. Left on a Sunday, the day before the work started, that blew off of my door. I did not find until this became a full-on investigation.
Panic! Oh, well, I'm glad the universe righted that ship for you. And all you did was just spend a bunch of energy thinking about things instead of actually being stuck. Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. Well, and I tried to use my spiraling energy for good.
How?
So I rolled up a hose that I had out that was really long that's kind of been in the way. Nice. I took a walk with a protein shake. I exercised.
Anything you can do. Just anything you can do.
I found that if I kept my hands busy, that it would distract my brain.
Did that work?
Partially.
100% no, dog. That's no for me. I can never distract myself good enough.
But well, no worries. Funny. Vehicle is out of the driveway after just a quick couple of bulldozer fills of dirt into the hole.
And several hours of full panic. So good. So speaking of poor communication.
Yes.
My atta girl, or not my atta girl, but my hoe of history today had to communicate via notes passing. So similar, you know, similar. Effective, yes. Still effective back then. Are you ready?
I'm ready.
Okay. So we're going to Colombia today. South America, what's up? We're going to be talking about Policarpa salivarita. Which I'm sure I'm fucking this name up royally, but we're talking about her all the same. So she was born January 26, 1795. She only lived to 22 years old.
Man.
Yeah. So a quote, maybe not an accurate quote. It was translated from Spanish, but a quote. Indolent people, how diverse your luck would be today if you knew the price of freedom. So, Policarpa, better known as, oh God, I lost it. I wrote this so many times. I wrote it so many times. Lapona? Yeah, I think it's, yep, Lapola. Again, I'm fucking it up. So Lapola was her nickname. She was, to put it in a nutshell, a seamstress who spied for the revolutionary forces during the Spanish Reconquista of the Viceroyalty of New Granada, Colombia. So we know that the white people were trying to colonize everything from Europe, French and all those. Spain was also trying to colonize everything. And so if you don't know your history, which I wasn't very familiar with this part, even though I should have been, the Spanish were trying to take over South America and colonize them. So this is the era of the, like, the same concept of colonizers running the government, and the locals are like, we've had enough. We're going to start to revolutionize. We're going to start to organize and fight back. So this is the same era, same concept, but totally different, you know, country. So she was a seamstress, and her parents had 8 kids, like 8 children back then, and they weren't being bred for work. Like, these, this family was educated. And so it's odd, though, because although she had 8 brothers and sisters, all of her historical records are not around. So, like, we don't know what year exactly she was born. We don't know where exactly she was born, but we have a good idea. It was between where all of her siblings were born or Bogota, between the two places.
Where her, do you know where she fell in the, like, rank of the siblings? Is she in the middle?
Was a fifth. Yeah. Oh, so, okay. Like, they moved either before or after her being born. It's, you know, so I, people are pretty sure she was born in her, where was, like, what's the state of it? Guadas. I'm gonna fuck up all these names, and I apologize in advance. So make fun of me if you will, correct me wherever you want. But so she was, so all of her siblings up to her were born in Guadas, and they never found her birth certificate. They don't know her government name, but in his will, her father referred to her as Apolina. So we assume that is her first formal first name. Then later on, when she was forging passports, she knew, used the name Georgia Apolinara, which I fucked that up too, but so she had a couple of different names throughout, but Lapola is how she's known and accredited for and everything else fun like that. So so she had 8 siblings, and they were all born, or I'm sorry, not all of them, all of them up to her were born in Guadas. They say she was born between 1790 and 1796. However, one guy called Rafael Pombo affirmed she was born in Margarita or Mariquita, which is a different place than Bogota and Guadas. So it's all over the map. But everybody has decided that she was born in 96 and she was born in Guadas. So whatever. Her parents. So
everybody, her, as in the 3 historians who, yes, worked on this.
The guy named some guy named Pobo. No. So, like, her parents didn't have the title of Hidalgo class, which I didn't realize that was like a class, if you will, like middle class. Mm. But like, so it showed that they had some sort of education and notoriety or something like that. Although they didn't have the title, they were still fairly well off, judging by their home, which is now a museum. The children were all educated in some way, and they were all literate. So it's not very common for that to be a thing, but it's very important in this instance, because as a spy, she was able to pass notes. So she was able to read them.
Mm-hmm. Right, yeah.
Yep. So she was actually able to infiltrate. So she became very important. So they were She was even supposedly allowed to teach in public schools at that point. Don't know exactly when. I don't know where. I don't know how. I don't know how old she was. But in that time frame, when it was kind of frowned upon for women to do anything in the public's eye, she was allowed to teach in school. So that means she had a lot of education under her belt. They moved to Bogota between 96 and 98. They lived in a small house that the dad actually like acquired. I don't know how, but he ended up getting it. And then unfortunately in 1802, the smallpox epidemic broke out, killed thousands of people, including her mom, dad, brother, and sister. So dang. Like, yeah, immediately after that, Wikipedia is like, shit fell apart real fast. Like everything fell apart after that. She was closest to her brother, Bibiano, and became his guardian when her parents died. At first, I guess they were taken in by a family where she worked as a maid for a while. But then, also two of her siblings went to the Augustinian order, which was like a Christian order that followed the rule of St. Augustine. Two others went to a farm in Tina. I don't know where that is in Colombia or if it's in Colombia, but it's in South America. Then the eldest sister decided she wanted to move back to Guadas around 1804 and actually ended up taking her sister and little brother with them. So La Pola and Bibi go back with the oldest sister to their hometown where they live with her aunt and godmother until the eldest sister got married and then the eldest sister took them in. So they were like living with family, kind of shuffling around. At this point, she was like maybe early teens, like maybe mid teens, because she was born in, yeah, so she was 12.
So not even a teen.
No.
Preteen,
you know, the most crucial moments in your life. So it turns out her family though was all educated and they were all part of the revolution. They were all not okay with what was happening. They were watching all of the strife, the trauma, the drama happen, unfold. They didn't love the government. They didn't love the royalty at the time, having the stronghold as they did over the country. And they didn't really honestly care for the fact that their people were being divided, and like labeled. So like, Guadas was a really important stop because it was on the road through New Granada. So like it connected the Caribbeans to Bogota. So if you don't know what I'm talking about, look on a map and you'll see it. So that road brought a lot of intellect, but diversity as well. So you had Black people, you had white people, you had indigenous people, you had a fourth group that was like essentially anybody you couldn't identify would be there.
You know, when I went to Aruba, we went on a catamaran and part of the safety talk was don't swim out too far. Or when we get to a certain point, don't swim at all, etc. Because basically you could get taken to Colombia. Like if you're in Colombian waters, like they will kidnap you.
Yeah. Scary. But yeah. So. So it's, you would have likely gone through that town then, if you were taken.
I was taken. Yeah.
Yeah.
No, I mean, it's interesting because Colombia now, it seems very much tumultuous. Ruled. Yeah. Very much it ruled by drugs and corruption. And
yeah,
basically it sounds very, very scary, especially for a little blonde white girl who's just trying to enjoy her catamaran.
Well, yeah, you would have been a sight to behold over there in the Columbia. Oh my gosh, it's so funny. So the town was always like a center point of commerce and news information as well. So like it was a rest stop. It was a lively town. It had a lot going on and it was one of the bigger towns, obviously. And so her family became revolutionaries as well. So her brother-in-law, who she was living with, ended up dying while he was fighting in the Southern campaign. Her brother also fought and was captured, but he ended up escaping, and I do not know how. So, like, she wasn't originally one of those people who was into politics and into, like, you know, freedom and being this way, but she kind of fell into it because she was just surrounded with it. She really wanted to be educated. Like, she just wanted to work on her education and do that kind of thing, you know, be successful, educated, blah, blah, blah.
Mm-hmm.
But after it started really impacting her family, she absolutely joined in. So, in 1817, she was back in Bogota, actively participating in political issues. Oh yeah, there's also, like, once the revolution broke out, a military and colonial officer and his wife were smuggled out by the mayor, and supposedly they stopped at her house in New Granada on their way out, and they, like, basically told her, like, hey, this is happening, so be prepared. They fled, left like fucking scaredy pants. So she was actively participating in political issues, but she was really well known in her little hometown. So when she went back to Bogota, and, like, basically that's where the royalists landed, they made it very difficult to get in and out of the city. So it wasn't always Bogota, but it's what we know today. So the city limits are a little bit different, but royalists came, took over, and basically stopped people from being able to go in and out of the city. And this is when her forged passport comes in. So she and her brother ended up having documents and safeguards in place for them to get into the city. They had a letter of introduction from two revolutionary leaders. So I don't really know how this, like, played out, but basically what happened was she went into the city as a nobody, playing as she was a royalist. But then once she was in the city, she had, like, the revolutionary leadership under her, supporting her, looking for her, getting ready to take her in. So she ended up at a house by a lady that was owned by a lady called Andrea. And this home was essentially where all of the revolutionary work took place. And she was undercover as, like, a servant for the house, for the leadership. So, like, I don't know if it was the house that they were in, who was owned by the lady called Andrea, if it was set up to be, like, just another everyday place where people did their thing, or if it was, like, a royalist home that was really undercover revolutionary home. But she was there, and she was able to basically infiltrate other homes of the, like, royalists by being a servant or being a seamstress. So she would go into these homes and do her little thing and hang out, offering her services.
She's doing this on her own. Her siblings are not joining her.
Yeah, okay. Correct. It's just her little brother, BB, now at this point with her. And he's 12. So she's, like, 16. So another reason they went to Bogota was because she wasn't really well known in that city. Like I said before, so she could, like, move around freely, meet anybody and everybody, talk to them. So she was really able to do a lot of, like, undercover work while she was there. She would collect maps, intelligence on upcoming events and activities. She would identify who the key players were, and even like who the revolutionists, or like who they suspected to be a revolutionist. So she was, like, real, real in at that point. She was super deep.
She's reminding me of Mary. I think her name's Mary Jane Gold.
Probably.
Who the series Transatlantic on Netflix is kind of based on her and how she would save people from the French Revolution.
Yeah. Okay.
And the story is got a lot of parallels.
Yeah.
In regards to like getting to know the right people, using even her flirtatious manner or yep, whatever.
She used that too.
To yep. Get what she wanted and having. I mean, she had resources because she was American and her father sent her money. But basically, even when that got tapped out, she would always find a way to get fake documents. Mm-hmm. And so she started like helping just regular people, not just celebrities. Like at first it was just celebrities or, you know, royal people or whatever. Yeah. People with stature that supposedly you care about more.
Right.
Versus those the peons. But so anyway, her story is having a lot. I'm like, oh, this is kind of like a weird flashbacky moment that I'm having when I watch Transatlantic, which is not the same region by any means, or even the same time, but interesting.
Very yeah,
interesting.
It's well, like I said, it's kind of the same era, same time frame of like these things happening. So let's see. The Declaration of Freedom was signed in 1813, or a Declaration of Freedom was signed in 1813, and Napoleon was exiled to Elba, and his brother was booted off the Spanish throne. So this kicked off like a bunch of anger and a bunch of craziness. So
upheaval.
Yes, there it is. So, you know, in the middle of a revolution, the leaderships are changing and the like echo effect is real wild. But anyway, so she also did, in fact, encourage young men to go into to war for the revolutionaries as well. She would utilize her ability to flirt with them and get them on board. And then she would immediately send them on their way to become revolutionaries. And she ended up like garnering quite a few soldiers. She was like a big, big deal. She would end up getting like convincing a lot of people. So here's where the drama starts. Her 12-year-old brother was going back to the house that they lived in, and two Spanish army guards followed him and were accusing him of being a revolutionary and, you know, he's working for the other side, da da da. And Andrea opens the door at the house and she's like, "What are you guys doing? Why are you harassing this boy?" And they were like, "We know you're revolutionaries, da da da." So she's like, "All right, you're right. Can I burn all of these documents?" She was able to bribe them into allowing her to burn all the evidence. However, when La Pola came around, apparently she was fucking mouthy. Like, she was not okay with any of this shit that was going down, and she verbalized it every chance she had. So although they were bribable and they didn't get them on, you know, like literal, they could have been caught right there. They definitely took her and tried to keep her hostage or arrest her because she wouldn't shut the fuck up. So like,
oh my God.
So like she was scot-free. And then all of a sudden, boop,
she talked herself into trouble. She
talked herself into trouble. So I have a feeling she was definitely one of those people who would talk to you and talk a lot. And she had a lot to say. So I feel like the story, you know, is missing that part of it. Everywhere I looked, so many different sources. This is basically her story. And there's not much more to go into it. There's not like a bunch of, you know, tea about who she was as a person.
Mm-hmm.
But I'm pretty sure she was a sassy little thing. So, one day, unfortunately, so one story says that Almeida brothers were caught carrying information back. The other source says that Alejo Sabarian was caught carrying information back. But at the end of the day, what happened was they were walking back and they had a list They had a list of people who are revolutionaries. They had a list of people who are royalists, and it had a bunch of information, and she had signed all the documentation. I don't know why, but she signed it, and they were like, oh, hell no.
I mean, I guess what does signing the lists mean? That she's giving a go-ahead of some kind?
I don't know. I don't know if it was like a formal, like, this is, you know, before there were some way to like sign it secretly. I think that the secret signage didn't consider it because they didn't think they'd get caught. I don't know. I have no idea. But I have a feeling it was some way to kind of like confirm what the documents were stating.
Right. So, I mean, she's putting herself in a quote unquote position. Leadership position.
Mm-hmm.
Some sort of approver, it sounds like.
Mm-hmm. Yep. So the lists had all sorts of different people. Between 6 and 8 people, that's what I read, were captured. And so basically what they did was, she ended up trying to like put it all together so it makes sense, articulate it. So they, okay. Oh, I lied to you. I'm going to back up a little bit. So the Almeida brothers, they got caught carrying information back that linked directly back to her. They were all accused of helping the soldiers desert the Royal Army, join the revolution. They were accused of transporting weapons and ammunition and supplies to insurgents. She actually ended up helping them escape from prison, and she helped them find refuge, which at that point was when the loyalists suspected her of treason, but they lacked the evidence to prove and accuse her of espionage and treason. So that happened before the documentations. So she had escaped mostly prosecution the first time because Andrea was allowed to burn evidence. Who, they almost captured her and took her as well, but she was pregnant, so they left her at the house. So it was her only saving grace. So then the Almeida brothers, they got caught carrying information. They got broken out of jail, and then her like image became hot, apparently. So Alejo Sabarian, who was also apparently her lover, which there's no full story there. It's either she was in love with their lovers or not. He was arrested when trying to escape Casanare, which is a place, like a town. And that allowed the royalists to fully arrest LaPola because he had a list of people who were royalists and patriots given to him by her, signed by her. So Sergeant Iglesias, a principal Spanish officer in Bogota, was responsible for finding her and her brother. They didn't really care at first. They wanted to get Alejo done and taken care of, and all the other men that were like, you know, maybe higher up in some sort of ranking. Mm-hmm. But eventually they did go after her and her little brother. They were captured and they were put into a place that was turned into like a makeshift prison. It was like somebody's home that they turned into a prison in Bogota. So this was in November. So she had broken out the brothers in September. And by November, she was fully taken, you know, caught. So
can you imagine, like, you're just living on the edge every day.
Mm-mm.
Like, am I going to get caught? Am I not going to get caught? Like, right. Is this going to be traceable back to me? Like, what? Yeah. What? I mean, the only couple of hours that I had of panicking today because I was stuck.
Right. And then like your panic was like my car, not your life.
I know.
It's a wild time.
Like how do they live? Their blood pressure must have been insane.
I just, well, I mean, again, she wasn't there for very long.
True. But there's got to be an innate part of you that gets a rush and enjoys the adrenaline and can survive off of the, you know, fight or flight mode. But for me, that I'm like, that sounds way too exhausting.
I know, right?
Like, that sounds crazy. I mean, you're in a different mind space, like a different mindset, because it's more on survival. You're trying to survive your situation, survive your life, and do what you think is right and follow through on beliefs. But there's reasons why there's only so many people who act the way that she acts, right? Because right. Not everybody is built that way.
No, everybody's built different. Ugh. Yeah. Actually, like, okay.
I don't know if I'm the one.
It ain't me. That's not my battle. All right. So actually, I found some more notes about how she was able to bribe the guards. So while LaPola was yelling at the sergeant, Andrea was able to bribe the two accompanying guards to let her burn sheafs of papers that contained letters from patriots, a list of financial supporters, letters from guerrilla chiefs, and the deposition of the Spanish army. Discipline in the Spanish army was apparently not all that tight if the two guards could also be easily bribed behind their superior's back. So I love the fact that she was able to sit there and scream at this guy, distract him. I don't know if it was on purpose or not, but she ended up doing it to a point where the other lady was able to be like, hey, you want to see my boobies and maybe not take me to jail and let me burn all this shit down?
I was going to say, I'm still missing the bribery piece of this, because burning letters and stuff doesn't really equate to those two particular soldiers or whoever the sergeant was. Yeah,
like, how did you bribe them? I mean,
yeah.
Like I said, this story is so short and there's not enough tea for me. I looked.
It's not even in English.
Right. It has been translated. Okay.
Well, but I mean, the original sources have all been Spanish. So.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. Okay. So November, her and her brother were taken to the Council of War. And on the 10th, they were sentenced to execution by firing. Her lover, air quotes, was also there. So her and 8 other people were sentenced to be shot, firing squad. Apparently the night before her execution, she would not stop cursing the Spaniards, and she wouldn't stop, like, the whole time. She just kept yelling about them. At one point she was tired and she was thirsty. A guard was entertained and handed her a glass of wine, and she tossed the glass back at him and said she would not even accept a glass of water from her enemies. So she was just feisty through and through.
At that point, you're choosing death over life.
Mm-hmm. She even was told that if she swore loyalty, she could go free, but she defiantly refused. Absolutely would not do it. So by the morning of November 14th, 1817, at 9 a.m., she and 8 others were walked out to the main plaza of Bogota, where the firing squad assembled. And per customs, traitors were meant to be shot in the back while they were kneeling with their hands tied behind their backs. And this was intended to be like a warning to others. There's no brave heroics here. We'll shoot you in the back like the coward you are. You know, just bullshit. So not surprising, our spicy little meatball was not interested in doing any of that. So when they were marching her down, her hands were bound and she was flanked by 2 priests pleading with her to beg forgiveness, you know, all that fun stuff. And she completely ignored them and continued to swear at the Spanish.
I wish I knew Spanish swear words.
Mm-hmm.
Because in my mind, I'm basically seeing her being like, fuck you, you motherfuckers.
Yeah. All I got is chingo su madre cabrona. You can't even say it right anymore. Omar, we need your help. So they were chanting, telling her, you need to repent. And she was like, F you. She was cursing the Spaniards, claimed they would be defeated in the coming revolution. When they stopped everybody, they were all instructed to turn their backs and kneel, and she absolutely refused. She stood tall and at the Spanish firing squad yelled, "I have more than enough courage to suffer this death and 1,000 more. Do not forget my example." She was not having it. So she was ended up, we don't know exactly how it happened. She was kneeling in the streets. She had her back turned to the firing squad. Some say that she ended up shuffling off her clothes a little bit. So her back was exposed, being indecent a little bit on purpose. Oh, she was also yelling at the firing squad to turn the rifles on the authorities instead, calling them assassins. Turn your guns on them. They're assassins.
It wouldn't be right without some drama.
No.
Need the theatrics.
Yep. So when the firing squad actually began shooting, it said that she turned around to face the squad and was shot in the front.
Damn.
She was not to the last minute, second, she wasn't having it.
Wow.
Yep.
I just don't know. I don't know if I'd want to see the bullet coming at me.
I mean, I think at that point, I don't have my mental capacity to do much other than just be a wild person.
I mean, maybe I would take more of a freeze approach and just be like, I guess it'll hit me when it hits me. And because if it's coming from behind you, you don't know.
Yeah.
But if you turn around and you see it coming at you, like, that's different.
Do you think time would slow down?
I mean, it's going to be like a millisecond probably between the time that she turns around and they shoot the gun. But in my mind, it makes me think of like a movie where all of a sudden just everything slows down and she has the moment of something flashing before her eyes. I don't know. I just feel like if you're able to turn around, you might be even able to dodge the bullet.
Yeah, I don't know.
It's too fast, I'm sure. No.
And there's a whole squad of people, so it's not like there's just one. So you're really kind of fuckety fucked.
I don't know. I guess she wanted the enemy to be able to see the face that they were shooting.
Oh, yeah. This, although we're not fully sure, this established a lot of, I don't know, like, she was a martyr at this point. And it established her, like, her history, like the things she did and the way she acted and the way she rebelled. And although she was taken out at 22 years old, she still very much had a lot of people admiring her for her strength. So it was customary after executions for the bodies to be marched around the city to basically scare everybody else into, like, folding for the royalists and just, you know, kind of bowing down. She was spared that embarrassment as she was a woman. Her remaining brothers claimed her body and gave her a proper burial in the Covenant Church of San Augustin. And on December 17th, 1819, the Republic of Colombia was officially established, including the Venezuelan and New Granada. So it wasn't too far after her death that things settled down. Her death wasn't like, oh, sing it from the rooftops immediately, but when there was a playwright who made a bunch of awful plays, he ended up doing a play about her and it kind of memorialized her even further. And that's really when her, like, fame started to take off. Other women in her ring that she worked in, so the Andrea lady and others, were also executed shortly thereafter. So unfortunately, the revolution, the rebels were definitely losing steam. A lot of the rebels were captured. A lot of them were executed. And there were people, there's soldiers who were, you know, revolutionists who would turn and go back to the royalist side. So it was a really hard fight.
Yeah, I mean, it just sounds like based on sheer numbers.
Right.
Like,
so
the little guy was just going to either get taken out or you get in line.
Right. Oh, God, Lord. So there are also paintings painted. And because you don't really know who anybody, what anybody looks like, because the artists back then had all of their artistic liberties and did whatever the fuck their heart told them to. There are several paintings of her. Most of them are what you would imagine somebody from Colombia to look like, with the dark hair, complexion, eyes. There was also an artist who painted her with blonde hair and blue eyes because that was the scene back in the day. So you're going to get a variety of those. However, in 1967, on November 8th, Law 44 was passed by the Congress of the Republic of Colombia and signed by the president, declaring that November 14th would be the Day of Colombian Women in honor of the anniversary of her death. She's also on currency, and her portrait was the only real female portrait ever actually used on currency. And so, like, if you look in the era, or you look at back at currency, you'll get obviously royalty on currency, but she was the only one who was had a legitimate portrait instead of an idealized version of herself, or an idealized version of her representing society, if you will. So she like continues to be a source of great pride, and she continues to be memorialized to this day. There is a statue of her. It was put up in 1910. I think it's still, you can still see it today, and it's of her sitting in her chair with her hands tied behind, or sitting down with her hands tied behind her back. She is now a heroine of sorts for different books and telenovelas. Erotic literature actually picks her up as well. And there is a feminist punk rock group called Las Polas.
Okay.
Every day, or every November 14th, is officially celebrated. Women of Colombia are officially celebrated. And that's the conclusion of La Pola. Polycarpa.
Well, I give you a lot of credit for trying to say all the words. For even picking this story, knowing that it was going to be a struggle. Sometimes, well, I've been very honest. I'm like, I don't know how to pronounce this name, so I pick a different story.
Well, I figured it might, you know, stumbling around would help.
How did you come across her?
Actually, I found her in an article. It was weird because I was like, okay, we have a bunch of people on this list. And I think I went through the list and nobody really spoke to me. So I Googled something. What did I Google even? Oh, it's right here. Are you not going to go back? Okay, fine. You're rude. I just... Googled.
I mean, it would be in your history.
I Googled crazy woman of history.
You did?
Yes. And then made my way to an article. First was seven most evil women in history, which is Eileen Wuornos. And I didn't want to go down the serial killer route.
Well, crazy is a unique term to use when you're trying to find.
But it gave me a great article because it gave me.
It did.
It gave me a really great article that 25 badass women you should know in history.
Yeah, I'd prefer if it was like you searched badass versus crazy, just perpetuating the narrative of crazy women.
I'm not perpetuating anything. I'm just utilizing keywords in a Google search because I know society looks at us like we're crazy. There's a difference.
Oh my God.
Yeah. I'm not perpetuating shit. I'm just playing the game.
Well, thank you for sharing that story. That's wild that she...
Sorry, it wasn't longer.
Well, yeah, I mean, it's wild that she just was like, on multiple occasions going to choose her demise.
Right. She just dove right in too. Like,
yeah.
She was like 8 or 9 when her parents and her, like, the 4 oldest people in her life she knew passed away because of a disease from smallpox. Like, shit. Everything was cool.
She very much is like the, we're only here for a short amount of time. We need to make an impact.
Seriously.
But then, so, yeah. I mean, her short amount of time was escalated because of the actions, but that's very notable to believe in something so hard and so deeply. Like, I don't think I have anything would be like, I'm willing to go down for this.
I don't think any of us do, honestly. We're all getting, you know, imagine, like, we all get pulled in different directions all the time. Imagine if we had a singular focus, how incredible we would be as humans right now.
Yeah. My thing is, I'm so open to diversity of thought and seeing how somebody else interprets something. Mm-hmm. And majority of the time I don't get it, but that's not the point. You know, like, mm-hmm. the point is that we all interpret, perceive one action or saying or something differently. And I find it fascinating to see how other people interpret things. Doesn't always change the way I feel about it, but I don't think I could ever be like, I believe in this so hard and I believe that it's so right that I'm willing to be taken down, because I can always see another side.
Yeah. I guess we've never been in a position to have all of our freedoms stripped from us, like, in that regard.
Right. Like, this is, I'm comparing this to, it's like an apples and oranges situation, because
like apples and broccoli, it's fine.
Yeah.
It's cool.
Yeah. Because, I mean, I've not been in a situation where I'm fighting for my life though, either.
No.
I'm just fighting to get out of my driveway.
Which you didn't even have to fight. They were going to fix it anyway.
I know. My one phone call to the city.
Hi, I'm stuck in my driveway. Okay, we'll call you back. Wait a minute. No. I need help. Unbelievable.
But yeah, that was a different time, obviously. when you're talking about full political eruption to the point of viva la revolution. And then maybe I'd wear a different hat. Maybe you'd hear something else come out of me.
Oh, I feel like if you were in that era, you would be in a completely different place. Like, you'd be a whole ass different woman. Your patience would be non-existent.
I would be a mouthy bitch for sure.
Yeah, I think we would both be kind of, we would, if I'm going to be honest with you, I can't imagine I would have made it past my 20s if I had to live in the era. Cause I know, for fuck's sake, no way are you going to shut me up.
I would have, like, fucked the enemy, ended up with his baby. Oh my God.
You're right. You're 100% right.
And then I would have had to fight for not only my own life, but now the life of my baby who's been exiled. I mean,
you and those titties would have made a lot of Public Enemy number ones, I bet. The bastard child of this revolutionary leader and this royalist.
Yeah. Man. What a time.
Yeah. I just don't know where I would land in that whole thing. I kind of want to go now and find somebody who can give me, like, all my past lives. So they can tell me, like, was I ever involved in any sort of, like, revolution?
I feel like in a past life, though, I was probably a man, because just the way that I function now.
You mean your primary vessels with a dick?
Well, that's a weird word, a weird way to say it. Primary vessel. I was alluding more to the fact that I'm, like, super logical, not very emotional.
And that's not because of your past traumas at all that forced you to be that person.
Well, no, but it's a combination. I feel like
it is.
In past life, I was probably a dude.
You were very pragmatic, I'm sure.
I was a dude or a real mouthy bitch.
I have a feeling you're a real mouthy dude. You probably was able to get away with a lot of shit. Let's be honest.
I was
lost all the time, I think.
You were a wanderer.
How did I end up here? I'm in Paris now. This is weird. Wasn't I just in Spain?
You're the one who gets like on the wrong boat.
Start
you off. Like get on the boat. You think you're going to America. And then all of a sudden everybody on the boat is Korean. And you end up over in South Korea.
I'm the only white person in Korea for fucking 3 centuries. On accident.
Funny. Anyway.
The mysterious white lady of Korea. It's
yeah.
Just like pictures of
you
one
inspired
of us.
Geishas. That's probably Japanese or something. I'm probably mixing up things, but anyway, it's just a joke. People don't come out. Don't come for me.
Self-admitted. I need more education in this realm. Don't come at me.
I'm just thinking that because, you know, they paint their face white.
Yes, I know. Yeah. Wait a minute. Isn't that racist? Are
not
geishas racist?
I don't know. It stems from, maybe I should do a whole history on geishas.
Maybe. Because actually geishas are really fucking cool. There's a huge history there.
There's
a lot of male entertainment to be had.
There is. I don't know where the white comes from. Except for I do know that still to this day, because I use Korean skincare. that there is an obsession with having lighter skin.
Yeah, I know the reason for that is because of the discrepancy in the classes. So like the people who worked outside were darker skinned than the people who didn't have to work. So having the fair light skin was like royalty, essentially. The lighter your skin, the more expensive you were. So there's that.
Because they even now have creams that are like whitening creams.
Yes.
And things of that nature.
It's still very much a thing.
Yeah. They don't actually like whiten your skin, but it's intended to give you a pure glow or, you know, some sort of like.
Intentional white cast is what I'm hearing.
It doesn't actually cast white though, but it's meant to make you more like youthful.
Oh.
Dewey. Yeah. Anyway, we've really gone down quite the
we haven't
side
done this
road
in a
here.
Minute. It's okay. Everybody's welcome. You're welcome.
So it's Attagirl time.
It is, Attagirl. And I have one.
Okay, good. Attagirls are where we pat ourselves on the back for something good that we've done or that's happened to us. And if you're ready to go, let's hear it.
So this past weekend, Sunday, yesterday, I'm trying to clean up. I'm emptying the trash. I pull the trash out and there's maggots, not in the bin where the trash bag goes, but in the bigger container. Nicole and I had the same trash can. So like you take the insert out and there were maggots. And I was like, what the fuck is this? There was nothing in there except for a dry piece of cloth wipes packet. Like there was no food in there because I was kind of psychotic about keeping that trash can clean because it was so fucking expensive. So I'm like, well, this is fucking gross. And I decided that instead of trying to salvage it like I would normally, I was just gonna fucking throw it away and buy myself a new trash can. Like there's no need to spend that extra time, energy, and effort to clean something out that I want to get rid of anyway. I'm just getting rid of it. And so I bought myself a new trash can yesterday, completely out of character. Normally I would have tried to salvage it, but it was just not salvageable. So I didn't even
try. Good
for you. Yeah, I'm proud of myself.
I know. I do feel like that we come from families where they're the ones
have
that
to fucking last.
Yeah. Or they're the ones that there's like the mold on the one corner of the cheese and like, just cut that off.
Mm-hmm.
You know,
like, let me tell you about how Share Bear self-admittedly would feed us moldy food. Oh, one day she sent a science project next door. It's still good. Just scrape it out. The fuck, I'm scraping nothing out. I'm pitching this entire container away. What's wrong with you?
Right. I don't know what it is. I don't know if it's just kind of lingered on still from
Depression era.
Yeah, Depression era.
I think it is.
Because honestly, our grandparents were part of the Depression era and grew up with minimalism and a bunch of kids.
Yeah. My grandpa used to steal butter and bring it home and like,
right.
But stealing
so,
butter.
Yeah. I don't know. I mean, it's interesting because I too have to struggle sometimes with like not salvaging things or parting with things, right, when I know in reality, like I should.
Yeah, like when I turned the trash can upside down and nothing was dumping out of it and there was a ledge in there, I was like, ah, fuck this. I'm done. I just can't do this shit anymore. I'm done trying.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, but even if you had salvaged it, you'd still have the memory of it.
Oh, yeah, absolutely.
And that's gross.
Yeah, it's so gross. I can't believe it. I'm admitting it out loud on a fucking podcast, but here we are. Like, I'm not a dirty person. The show's nasty, though. I don't know how the fuck it happened.
Ah. Lies, they're sneaky.
They are. Ugh.
Maya girl is, let's see, well, on Saturday I had a nice little family day and it's my sister-in-law's birthday coming up, so I got her like a cute little gift and I picked out like these amazing restaurants. She was super happy with everything, so I guess atta girl for being a good planner.
Being a good sister-in-law.
That too.
You guys are gonna have so much fun. She's the best. I do.
Yeah. So
atta girl.
We had it on the calendar for like a month or something, trying to find one weekend where,
oh my god,
we it would work out. And then it just happened to be by her birthday. So then I kind of made it about her. So
might as well. She deserves it.
Yeah.
She's great. How fun is that? Well, atta girl.
Thanks.
For being selfless.
I mean, I participated in these dinners and ate my weight in Asian fusion food as well. But
yum. I want sushi now. You're all over the map and I'm here for it.
All right, well, if you liked what you heard, please rate, review, subscribe, share with your friends. You can request a Hoe of History by sending us email to homanspodcast@gmail.com or on Instagram @homans_chronicles. Comment, DM, whatever you'd like. And then we still got a closed group that is
still running amok.
It's something. And it's called the Homeless Chronicles, a judgment free zone. And you just have to be prepared to not be prepared.
That's actually the best way I've heard you say that before. That's perfect. Yep. Homance out.